Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. This week, I found a reason to listen. Sorry. It's Hoobastank that's on this week. I'm sure they sing that song way better than I do. Maybe. I don't know. We do the show every single Wednesday, every single Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You use the code SDR, you get a 7-day free trial and 20% off the entire network. And every episode we've ever done, or just listen anywhere you consume a podcast or on youtube.com/the SDR show. Just spread the love. That's all we care about. And before we go into the show, let's take a moment to talk about our new sponsor, Promescent. They hooked everyone up at Gas Digital with their Climax Control Spray, basically the perfect gift for any man that wants to last longer in bed. If you're someone like me that shoots his loads a little too early and you want to seem like a He-Man master of the universe, this is the technology for you. They use a patented technology called Target Zone Technology. The basic truth is that it takes the average man about 5 minutes to climax, or in my case, a little bit less than that, and the average woman about 18 minutes. So if you just want to last longer and feel more manly, probably the best way to describe it, it's also the number one sexual enhancement product on Amazon and the only delay spray in North America with clinical studies to back up its effectiveness. And get this, shipping is free and a 60-day money-back guarantee, which is fucking amazing. So there's no reason not to try it. No prescription needed, no doctor visit at all. Just go to DelaySpray, DelaySpray.com, DelaySpray.com. And if you use promo code SDR, that's promo code SDR, you get 15% off to last longer and have better sex. And who the fuck doesn't want that? All right, here it is right now, the Hoobastank episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hoe. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, the sex, drug, and rock and roll show. Back once again, James Mattern is with me doing the co-hosting duties. Almost officially the most frequently. I would say you are the official secondary co-host. Is that fair, James?
Yeah, I feel like I'm Jay Leno in the Tonight Show back in the day. This is fucking great, man.
Just
I can't wait to peddle Doritos as well.
Yeah, Shannon is in the Gas Digital Studios. And then we have the dudes from Hoobastank, where this is going to be the first interview we've ever done in portrait mode. We are not blaming them. It turns out that it is a new iPhone issue. So I'm going to let it slide, guys. I'm going to let it slide. I don't want to.
Thank you.
But I'm going to do
Thank
it.
Thank you.
First, off the top, off air, I was telling you guys that I can't stop singing the Rainbow Connection because I saw a very cool old Muppet clip with Kermit and Debbie Harry singing the Rainbow Connection. I'd never seen that before, and it was amazing. And we find out that while James has some thoughts, Dan, you have no idea what we're talking about.
Well, can you sing me the chorus real fast?
Sure. Well, I'll sing you the opening line, which is,
okay.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows and what's on the other side?
Someday we'll find it. The rainbow connection.
The lovers, the dreamers, and me.
I've already tuned you guys out. I'm on. Yeah, I'm not into it.
It's a seriously great song.
John Denver wrote it, I believe. John Denver wrote it.
No, that
now you're shitting on John Denver on top of everything else. You're shitting
again.
On
I love Denver. Colorado.
Well, apparently not that song. James, what was your input on that?
So off the air, we discussed that he didn't know Rainbow Connection because he was watching Dukes of Hazzard and something else. I watched them all. I was Dukes of Hazzard and Rainbow Connection because I'm somewhere between a nerd and a bro. So fuck it, man.
Right, you're a well-rounded man.
You're a nerd bro.
I'm a nerd bro.
I like Kermit, but I also like seeing Daisy jump around a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
So equal that's
what
parts it's about. Manly and puss. I got it.
Touchdown. That's who I is.
Fine. Fair enough.
You know,
okay.
Another, you know, was another underrated Muppet song is the Moving Right Along. You know what I'm talking about?
Also good, yeah. And then also the one about It's Not Easy Being Green. It's adorable.
Oh, dude, that's deep.
Yeah,
deep song.
It's true. Yeah, Dan, you're missing out on everything. What's wrong with you? There were no songs in Chips.
The opening song is pretty amazing.
There's no words in that song. It's just fucking music.
I'm sure Eric Estrada. I'm sure Eric Estrada farted up a great number on set a couple times. Come on.
All right, so let's talk about a few things. One, Doug, I want to start with this, okay? You and I are very close in age. You're born 2 days after me, January 2nd, I think. I'm December 31st, but I'm a few years older. I think I'm 51, you're 45, 46, something like that. I don't know exactly where. But why do you look 20 years younger than me? Let's start with that. You're only a few years younger. Are you vegan? Are you something?
Oh my God.
You look way younger than me, and it's upsetting me.
I'm half Japanese, so I think genetically I've aged slower.
Is that what it
is? I think it's going to catch up with me. No, my diet consists of donuts, pizza.
You had salad the other day, though.
Oh, there we go.
Did I?
Oh, no, that was Chris.
No, sorry. Salad.
By the way, I know you're half Japanese, half Scottish. Do you identify more with either side, or you don't really?
I don't either. I remember early on. First two stories. When Dan and I first met, we were in high school, and he didn't know I was half Japanese. His description of me was a funny looking white guy. He said, "I just thought you were some funny looking white guy."
And he was right about that, but he didn't know why.
Yeah, exactly right. And then later on, once we had a record deal and started doing interviews and stuff, and people were like, "How does it feel to be like an Asian American or, you know, out in the spotlight that?" And I was like, "Me? Who the fuck are you talking to me?" Like, I didn't know I was carrying the flag for that. It was this different world that I wasn't aware of, you know, because I never woke up in the morning and like was brushing my teeth and were like, "Damn, I'm Asian," you know, like it wasn't a thing. But as I've done more interviews, I realize it has an impact.
Well, it's funny because I was born here. Were you born here?
Yeah.
I was born here, and my father's from Syria, my mother's from Spain, but not like first generation, second generation, it doesn't matter. I don't identify as either one at all, but I do know like a little bit more about my Syrian culture than I do my Spanish, but I don't really, I identify as American. I'm an American. I also think it's weird. Not to get too political here, but I don't like that we delineate Asian American, African American, whereas people call me American. We should all just be American. I don't know why that's happening, but that's my
opinion. Right. I can only speak for myself. Yeah. I don't mind if people say I'm Asian American, but I would have never thought of that until somebody brought it out. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like it's not how I immediately, it's not the default answer I would naturally go to.
Right. I don't want to get too into the political world because you end up dividing listeners. So let's just move on to something else. The first one, which I think, and I could be wrong, your tour that's about to kick off is one of the first major rock tours that's coming out during this post-pandemic, maybe post-pandemic world we live in. And it's such a great lineup. Everclear, Living Colour, Hoobastank, Wheatus. Living Colour, Corey Glover, a big, longtime fan of friend of this show. I've been friends with him for like 15 years at this point. Love the dude. And so it's such a great lineup. How hard was it? I don't know how involved you guys were or what
rock
to
hard.
Make this rock. Oh, you're half Asian. Ain't going to be that huge rock hard. Am I right?
I didn't say it was big. I just said it was hard.
Fair enough. So how scary was it to set up this tour when you don't know if it was going to be canceled again? And B, after not playing out for so long, are there any jitters of, hey, we haven't played out in 2 years? It's a little weird. You know what I'm saying?
The offer or the idea. Well, we've known about the Summerland tour. It's been going on for a long time now, you know, and we've had a few friends that have been on bands that have done this tour and had a lot of good things. And over the years, we've always said, like, dude, why don't we do it? You know, we'd love to do that. So I forget when it actually got brought up, sometime last year. And it wasn't like, hey, you got, you know, we're going to do this tour. It was more like, you know, they want to do this tour. They want you guys to do it. Are you interested if things open up, you know, it's everything has kind of been, Things that usually would be planned 6 months in advance are still not locked in with just weeks to go. You know what I mean? Right. Like, because they just don't know. But obviously things have been going in the right direction. So, so we're stoked about it. And as far as jitters, we, let's see, we started rehearsing last month and we, we're all based in LA still, except for our bass player who's in Vegas. So, he came back out and we rehearsed mid May, I want to say, for the first time, like the first time playing any live music together in a year and a half. But it was all right. And we just did a show 2 days ago. What day is it?
Saturday.
Saturday. We played outside of Dallas, which was our first show in 18 months, which is the longest we've ever gone in our entire, like, entire lives, not playing music, even pre-record deal. But it, you know, aside from some technical issues, I thought it was fine. It didn't, it was the proverbial, you know, just like riding a bike.
All right. That's good to hear. So now, a lot of this, well, first I want to get into this. One of my favorite all-time Hoobastank songs is Inside of You, right? Love that song. Would I, as a strip club DJ, would play it every single fucking night, and girls loved it, right? It just was one of those songs because of the suggestive lyrics and the high energy. Fucking to this day, still listen to that song all the time. That video, was it the best day of your lives? Because those girls are the hottest girls I've ever fucking seen in a goddamn video. Every one of them is goddamn gorgeous. Was that the casting situation? Were you guys single at the time? I just need to know. When I watched that video, I just watched it again recently, I'm like, God damn it, every one of these fucking girls is so hot. So just kind of tell me, were you guys single at the time? Was it the best day? Every, all that other shit.
I was married, I'm pretty sure.
Ugh.
Or at least engaged.
I think that our bass player at the time was single, who was a different bass player than we have now. And I think he might have been the only single one. And he kept in touch with one of the girls. He became friends with her, and who knows what happened. But it was pretty awesome being on set. I mean, because I, you know, I'm always filming my own stuff, my own behind the scenes footage and stuff. And I have just BTS, you know, behind the scenes content of them before they went on, like those. They were smoking hot, dude.
Ridiculous. That the blonde is still etched in my brain forever. God damn it, you're so hot. And then just with you speaking of the behind the scenes footage, just to change gears, you've been doing a lot of stuff on YouTube for the 20th anniversary of the first record. And you're doing, you have a lot of this stuff of you guys like behind the scenes stuff at the time, because hey, BTS, I assumed you meant behind the scenes and not the Asian boy band, but it's amazing. Oh, so you've always been recording that stuff, correct?
We have BTS.
Okay, that's good. That's, by the way, we might be doing a dating show with Shannon because she hasn't had sex in how many years, Shannon? 3 years. So we were going to call it Break the Streak, BTS, and we're going to put behind the scenes footage, and we already coined that term BTS. And if we play BTS music, we could do it three times.
Oh my gosh, BTS cubed.
Good call.
So it's great to see, watch some of the YouTube videos, you're going through the songs from that record, and you know, it's nice to see the 20th anniversary. I have to imagine no wedding thought you guys would still be together. I mean, three of you have been together since day one, and it was, I think it was 5 or 6 years before you even got signed, and you finally came out. Do you guys hate each other or what?
Sometimes. I remember signing the deal, like being in the attorney's office and him talking about all these fucking numbers and things, and my head kind of spinning. But at some point, he's like, oh, I got you this and I got you this. He was kind of patting himself on the back, you know, like, I got all these great things put in the deal. And one of these things is like, after 15 years, and it, you know, and you know, he's talking, but my head went, 15 fucking years. I'm going to be like 40 years old. Like, there's no way, like, how we're not gonna be doing this 15 years. We've only been doing it for 6 years, you know, like it didn't make any sense at the time. So to now, you know, still be doing it, coming up on 20 years of the first album, obviously time seems a little different nowadays, but, it's pretty wild. It's really weird.
It's 20 years since that first album, but am I right that you guys were together for like 5 or 6 years before then?
Yeah. Our first show was in 1995.
Did you at one point say, hey, you know, maybe we should move on from this band with us not getting a deal in 5 years and go our separate ways? Or did you never think of that?
I mean, did you?
There was a second, you know. You know, things are going well. Things are going well as an unsigned band. You're kind of doing this a little bit, kind of going up. And then we hit this moment where it looked like shit wasn't going to happen. We had been turned down by record labels. And it was a bummer, man. And I remember having a girlfriend at that time just going like, what the fuck am I going to do? And thought crossed my mind. But I also think we were so naive and so young and not dumb, but dumb that we just...
We can go with that.
Just yeah, kept going. You know?
Dumb's fine. It's an accurate description.
Yeah, going. And,
yeah, in 99, we had recently got a manager who we thought, I mean, that was the first time, because up to that point from 90, basically 95 through 99, we did everything ourselves. Mm-hmm.
And you put out like two independent records too, right?
Yeah, we did. We were self-managed, and you know, we got a manager and we got a demo deal. I think it was through Mercury. I don't even know, but it was like a legit deal with a major company to record some new songs so they could hear it to kind of go, oh, this is great. We want to sign you guys. You know, they would have like first writer, however that works. So I think in hindsight, I go, you know what? We probably got a little ahead of ourselves. We had friends in bands that had gotten record deals as well. So it kind of felt like, oh, it was our turn. I don't want to say that attitude was the driving factor on why we got turned down, because we recorded four songs. You know, at the time they seemed good. In hindsight, they weren't that good. You know, the label said, no thanks, but no thanks, but you guys can keep the songs. So our manager shopped it to every label, and they all said, no thanks, no thanks, no thanks. So, you know, in 99, we're like, okay, we thought we were knocking on the doorstep. They just said no. Mm-hmm. What are the odds that a band that everybody has just said no to, they're going to say yes to again, mm-hmm. you know, a second time? At least I remember thinking that, like, dude, that doesn't sound plausible. I think we're fucked. And I think at that point there were those thoughts in my head, like, shit, we may have just blown it, you know, and maybe it's time to do something else. But instead, because we're dumb, but instead we said, fuck it, you know, let's fire our manager. Let's tweak some of the music. Let's do it why we started doing it, because we fucking love writing music and rehearsing music and playing with music with each other and playing shows. And we stopped shopping the music around and we just started playing shows again. And I think less than a year later we were signed, and it was from not shopping. It kind of like
someone saw you guys at a show and that's how you got signed.
As much as I want to say, hey, you know, it was all us, we were fucking so good. A lot of it is who you know. You know, we do. Right. We did have a lot of people.
Or who you rhyme with? No. Who you blow, James? Who you blow was the joke.
Oh, who you blow?
Oh, I hear you, baby. I got you on that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we at that point, Dan had done some internships at record labels. We had met our, you know, a lot of A&R people. We were a decently popular LA band, unsigned LA band, you know, and then we went back and we recorded. I think we recorded three songs or four songs, what it was, on our own, not to demo, but honestly to put up, I think it was to put out a new album, like another self release, you know? Mm-hmm. And that ended up in the hands of some people. And then they were at shows and they wanted
James,
to sign us.
I can see, James, you have a question. You're in that I have a question mode.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by this. So, all right, you feel you're at the pedestal, you're about to blow up, and then the record labels all give you the business. Let me ask you, 20 years later, do you remember all those executives who said no? And do you have like spite when they get fired? Because clearly all of them have probably gotten fired at some point. As a comic, I almost had a show on Fox and then we didn't get past the read through. And then the guy who canceled us got fired 6 months later. I was high fiving motherfuckers on the street. I was like, yeah, son of a bitch.
I don't remember the people, the exact people that passed on us. Although I do remember the one A&R guy from Sony 550 that had our backs, and he was the reason why, no pun, but he was the reason why we were handed, I want to say like $5,000 to do a demo deal. And his name is Pete Cohen.
Yes.
And Pete was a champ and still is. I don't talk to him very often anymore, but he was just a great guy. He was very supportive of us. He was an A&R guy over at Sony 550. He loved us. So all these A&R guys out in Hollywood, they all knew who we were before we had a record mm-hmm. deal. They all know who the bands that are playing through LA.
Especially at that time, it was such a scene there to do that 20 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And whether it's the A&R guy who signs the band or the A&R guy's scout who was underneath him, who was the guy who's the kid who's sent out to the concerts at the Whiskey, the Rock, the Troubadour, the whatever. They knew who we were because we were making some noise. We were turned down. And when we came back with some newer, fresher songs, you know, they were, oh, what's that? Okay. So they were a little bit more interested. You know, Pete is the guy I remember out of all of this because he had our backs. He was the guy that basically called us up and said, look, we had to give him the music first. He had the first right of refusal, right?
Yeah.
That's a term.
Provided us with the money. And he had to call us back and be like, fuck you guys, you know, my superiors aren't fighting. They're not into it. We can't. And so that was hard, you know, but he was really open and honest with us. And I respect that. And I'll always remember him, you know?
Yeah. I don't remember. I definitely now don't remember who said no to us. I probably
had a sociopath like James. That's why.
Right. No, I mean, but back then I probably had more of a chip on my shoulder, but I don't remember going like, fuck those guys. You know, I didn't use it as motivation personally. I mean, because of what he said, there were a lot of cool people who were on our side who just couldn't get it past the goalkeeper, you know, like they didn't have that type of clout, which is fine. I understand that, you know, it's out of their hands.
Having said that, trust me. Yeah. The things that have been said that I have heard or read about people out, whether it's somebody on this radio station or it's somebody from this band, I remember. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had a conversation about it last night with some people and they brought somebody up and I was like, fuck that asshole. You know, that guy said this shit about us. And then in the interview in 2006, and I have not forgotten about that, you know,
that's
like,
funny.
You become like Arya in Game of Thrones. You get a little lisp.
You know, it's funny. I listen to the way they describe it. Like, they try every single label. They don't care if they say no. They're going to try again. That is my dating methodology on Instagram. I just keep going. Eventually, someone's going to say yes, and that's how I get laid. It's how it works for me.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Before we go any further, one of the longest sponsors on this show. And if you take their chewables, you'll get one of the longest on you. You get it. It's Blue Chew, and we're talking about their chewables. You take the Blue Chew chewable, it acts faster because you're chewing it, and then before you know it, you're doing it. Blue Chew's tablets help men achieve harder, stronger erections to combat all forms of erectile dysfunction. Blue Chew is an online prescription service. No doctor visits, no awkward conversation, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. It ships right to your door in a discreet package. What more could you ask for? Go to BlueChew.com for all the details and any important safety information that may concern you. But if you do it right now, BlueChew.com, you use the code SDR, the first month is 100% free. You just pay the $5 shipping. Supporting the sponsors that support this podcast is all we care about. And not only that, we know for a long time that we love to chew it and do it. And you only do that with chewables at BlueChew.com. All right, let's get back into it. Are you guys going to do like a big honoring of the 20th anniversary on tour? Is that part of the plan?
No. That's the short answer is no. But the Summerland tour is going to be all July. I think we're going to take August off, and then it's going to continue through September, which they're booking now, which is another thing, COVID thing that it would have been booked already, but they're like, you know. So we should be back to some semblance of free time in October. And the release of the record was in November of 2001. So honestly, the only like official thing we have planned to celebrate that is we have a show on the actual release date at the Whiskey in LA, which is where we used to play all the time, on the actual 20th anniversary. Besides that, moving forward, I think maybe we could throw together some type of tour where we literally just play that album only.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah. Like
we also have not publicly announced the show on the 20th. But
news, baby.
Right. Yeah, news. Right.
We don't give shit. We want people to know about it. But yeah, so November 20th, we will be playing, which is the day the first record came out. We will be playing the Whiskey A Go Go.
That's awesome. That's fucking cool as shit. By the way, yeah, this is just a funny little quote here, guys. You and I have something in common, which is that we're both in the Urban Dictionary, okay? And according to Urban Dictionary, a hoobastank is a dirty, sweaty vagina. But apparently, you made up the word, and it's not an actual word. And Ralph Sutton's in the Urban Dictionary, and it means like, what, can you look it up, Shannon? I always forget. It's something very derogatory and mean, but somebody, obviously a disgruntled fan, put it in a while ago about me. And I forget, can you read what it is, Shannon, or bring it up on the screen? But I know that you guys made up the word hoobastank, that it doesn't really mean anything. Here it is. Let's see what it says. There it is.
Oh, my God.
A disease in which your eyes are entirely too close together. This causes occasional bursts of stupidity and a lack of common sense. So that's me in the Urban Dictionary. All right, you can close that. And a hoobastank is a dirty, sweaty vagina, apparently.
I don't. Yes, we did make up the word. It doesn't mean a dirty, sweaty vagina.
So stop referring to Shannon's vagina as a hoobastank is what you're saying.
I don't care what people call it.
I call it a Ralph Sutton. What are you going to do? You know, each have their own, baby. It's a free country.
Right. I think, look, I wouldn't say that we've been really stoked about the name for our careers. But, you know, on one hand, I go, dude, that was the dumbest, or it is the dumbest, like, possible name we could possibly come up with. I understand why we did. We were teenagers. We were playing backyard parties, you know, teen centers, cafes, any place they would fucking let us make noise, you know, with a bunch of other bands with stupid names, you know. And so I get it. And when we actually signed our record deal in 2000, on the contract, it doesn't say hoobastank. It just has the four members because we were planning at that point to change the name. Like, okay, right. Like we have a chance to press reset now. And, you know, we take our music seriously and we should have like a more serious name. Mm-hmm. So, wow.
Like something like the Gentleman of Hoobastank, something very
or whatever, dignified. Something. Yes. Hoobastank, sweaty vaginas. Yeah. Our A&R guy at the time, yeah, right after we signed a deal, we had a show at the Whiskey. He came and saw the show and it was sold out and the audience was chanting like Hoobastank. It was a good show. And after the show, he came up to the dressing room and was like, you guys cannot fucking change your name. It has to be like, and we were like, I think we fought him for a while on it. And obviously we lost. So yes, it sounds stupid. It sounds silly and it's made up, but also I don't think if it was something, I'm off here looking at a plaque actually with it. I think if it was something more generic, it wouldn't be like woven into the fabric of pop culture, you know?
Right. It makes sense because you made up a word that, I mean, most people know the word. Like if you say hoobastank, right. I thought it just meant something I didn't know what it was when I first heard the name 20 years ago.
Yeah. If we were the gentleman, people wouldn't be using it as you know, it wouldn't be, like I said, part of pop culture. Right. And granted, it's a punchline for most of the ways it's used in pop culture.
Right.
Whatever. We've been doing it for so long. I don't fucking care.
What about Lord and Lady Hoobastank? That sounds classy.
Yes. Lord and Lady Douchebag.
By the way, just to jump around a little bit, from Fight or Flight, you had a song called This Is Gonna Hurt. And I use that song to tell people, if you're going to break up with your girlfriend, you need to get fucking juiced up for it. Put on this song. Was that what that came from? Was that from a breakup, that song?
I don't know necessarily. Probably. I think, dude, I feel like I was channeling our bass player, to be honest with you. I think I was.
Because three of you have been in the band forever. Your bass player is the only one that was replaced.
Yes. But he's also been in the band for over 10 years now. Right. So,
and that song actually is his baby too. It's what he brought that into the band. So,
I thought you meant, by the way, that you were getting up the juice to fire your old bass player, and that's what that song was about. I misunderstood you.
No. And to be honest with you, when the original lyrics is, this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you, or it was reversed. And I remember in the recording, our producers like, you should switch that around. And of course I didn't want to, but I did. So even the initial meaning of the song got twisted around in the recording. So I don't know.
What's also interesting is that, okay, you guys were part of a time when rock would still chart on Billboard music, like when rock was actually still part of the zeitgeist, good word, James, where you could actually have a hit on radio and be a rock band and be, it doesn't exist anymore. You were part of that last wave of when rock could be mainstream, so to speak, right? And I would say that when I think of two bands that did this the most effectively, I guess, you and Filter put a song on that wasn't 100% indicative of your sound, although you've had slower songs on I think on the first record, the last track was a little slower, but whatever. The Reason brought in people that probably didn't know you were even a rock band and didn't know you had heavier songs. They didn't know Crawling in the Dark, whatever. But obviously it fucking probably, I would imagine, completely changed your life, made you much bigger band than you ever would have been. My first question would be, after that hit so big, did you find yourselves trying to write another Reason or write against the Reason where you didn't want to be looked at that or you wanted to follow that again? What, either side of that coin, did that ever happen?
I think it was all sides of that coin, to be honest with you. Coming off the first album, Crawling in the Dark was the most successful song, at least the one we felt we wanted to emulate in some way. And I remember there was talk of that going into the recording of the Reason album. A&R guys, band producers going, saying, what's going to be the next Crawling in the Dark? Obviously it wasn't the Reason, but then after the Reason, I don't think initially, I think at least for the band, it wasn't like, okay, let's do the Reason again. I think initially it was exactly the opposite. It was fuck that song. You know, like at least I felt there was pushback within the band already, because like you said, the success of that song was something so unexpected, and it wasn't even planned as a single,
if I'm not mistaken, right?
It was not by the band. Yeah. Like, right. It was a song that got bigger than the band and wasn't, like you said, wasn't really indicative of the style of the band, you know? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people would come and go like, dude, you guys are way heavier than I thought you were going to be, you know? And it's going to alienate, unfortunately, some people who had taken ownership in the band from the first record and was really like, really dug that we were a big band, but not a huge band. And, right. And there was a certain vibe that, you know, I don't know, a brand, you know, with the band early on that got changed. Like, right. I always say, like the first album, the trajectory of our careers, through the first album and through the beginning of the second album was how I imagined it. If I ever imagined it, or how I actually wanted it to go, like, okay, this is the type of band we are. And that's actually what type of band people think we are. And we're successful and the shows are high energy. And it's what I want. And we're playing with bands that I enjoy playing with. And then this song comes out and then we're playing sheds for, you know, the 16-year-olds and 13-year-olds and their parents now.
Right. And they just want you to sing the Reason. They don't want to hear Crawling in the Dark. They don't want to hear Out of Control.
It wasn't the venue, the type of show that I was used to playing or liked playing. I liked more physical shows and it was just like, okay, now what do we do? We're not that band, the one, you know, we're not the band that this one song has made everybody think we are. So going into the third album, there was already, and you got to remember that fucking song was completely oversaturating everything.
Everything.
I understand why people were like, fuck that band, man. I'm so tired of hearing that song.
But it's a weird thing because, you know, you always want your bands that you love to become more popular because you want them to be around. But there's that douchebaggy hipster rock and roll vibe of people that they don't want their band to become popular. It's like a curse once their band hits mainstream, they're like, fuck those guys, they sold out or whatever. Even though that right. wasn't your intention, there's an old joke like, how many hipster rock bands does it take to change a light bulb? And the joke is, don't worry, it's a number you never heard of. Because, you know, nobody wants to know, you know, they don't want you to know their band. And that happened where you had your, I mean, not a, more than a hardcore following, because obviously you had several charting singles from that first record and Before the Reason, but it just changed the trajectory completely. And as you said, you were on the path that you wanted to be on, and that took you to a different path.
Right. It was something unexpected, unplanned, and I, honestly, at the time, that we were fighting it a little bit, especially going into the next record. So I remember thinking, and dude, we would go through parts and we go, does that one thing, does that sound like The Reason? Fuck it. And like, nobody wow. would have ever expected it. Like, does this, is it an E? Don't write an E, because it's The Reason's an E, write something else. Like, I remember actually doing that. Like, that sounds too much like The Reason. Or,
and you probably don't think want anybody's the words Reason in any song anymore. You can't use
dude,
that word.
Today, I still fucking, when I'm trying to write lyrics and something comes up and I say the word Reason, I almost go like, I can't say that. I can't say that fucking wow. word.
I mean, Dan said it instinctually when you said the reason that you did something, you go, no pun intended, because it is so part of who you guys are that if that word comes up, it's going to be, oh, like, you know, just, but there is something beautiful about creating that everybody, nobody doesn't know that song that's over 20. And now, although we have to get into it, under 22 now because of that fucking crazy hashtag I'm not a perfect person thing that happened this year. I don't know how many millions, if not billion people were doing that nonsensical TikTok thing where girls in their 20s and 14-year-olds, they all know the song now. It's nuts.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. It's.
Did you guys do
yeah.
it?
Here's what happened. We didn't have a TikTok account. We were getting messages and phone calls from our manager and friends going like, hey, you know, there's this thing going on TikTok. You guys should check it out. And I think that was going on. That kept on going for a couple of weeks. And then when we said, fuck it, we'll take a look. I think at the time there was like 300 million people with this tag, you know, doing this thing. And it was just a silly thing where they play, you know, it's like a 15-second video where they do something and then they mouth, I'm not a perfect person to the intro of the song.
Right.
Showing some type of regret or that they're saying they're dumb or whatever. It was fun. So we made an account. We put up one video of me basically, and I forget what it was titled. It says like, after 20 years realizing you named your band Hoobastank. Like,
while he's staring at
while I'm staring at all these plaques and stuff like that, then I mouth, I'm not a perfect person. And then that thing fucking exploded. It had like 2 million views in like a day or something. I don't know what it was. It was just a lot.
Something ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. But it wasn't something. It wasn't something we controlled. You know, for a couple of weeks, I did a bunch of interviews and people asking like, what are you going to do next? What are you going to do next? And I'm like, I don't.
Yeah. You didn't do it. I would love to know.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it would be nice. You guys have this illusion that we plan this thing or that at least we have some kind of control over where to take all these, you know, 500 million people at the time. Right. Like, they don't fucking, this will be gone as soon as it.
Yeah, it'll be the next trend will be out there. But it is amazing. The one that I saw even remembered was a guy, and it said his sixth cheat day in a row, and he was about to eat a burger, and then he's saying, I'm not a perfect person. That was the one I saw. I'm like, oh, shit. It became everywhere. It's just amazing how omnipresent TikTok is and how that was just everywhere. Then I read also that you guys got a 2,000% Spotify increase when that came out. That's fucking nuts.
Yeah.
We couldn't work all 2020, but about all of our streaming numbers were kicking ass. So we were working on the couch.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. You don't get, there's no monetization from TikTok with that, right? Or is there? It's too short of a clip. Or is there?
To be honest with you, we're too stupid to answer that question. We don't know. But as far as where it drove people to Spotify and it drove people to YouTube. We, you know, I did something last year around September where I went onto YouTube and onto our YouTube channel and I looked at the amount of views for the song The Reason, and it was like, it's gone up like 100 million since then.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to break a billion on that video, I think, by the end of the year. It's like 780 80 million right now.
I know. I got a lot of computers running that thing in my house.
It's the way to do it, baby.
That's pretty amazing. And also, by the way,
numbers up, baby. Hey, no shame in that, dog.
Did you guys edit the Richard Cheese version with your concert, or did somebody else do that and send it to you? Because I loved that.
No, you did.
I did it.
That was brilliant. That was a brilliant moment. It's worth going to your YouTube just for that, because and you synced it up really well. It was really well done.
What happened was, so I had come across his version of the song, had no idea that him and his band had done it, but we had listened. We used to listen to him.
Yeah, I know who he is.
We used to see him off and on in our dressing room as we were getting ready to go on stage, because it was funny as shit. And I heard that he did our song, and I was like, oh fuck, okay, cool. And we had some footage. I just chopped it up and did it, and it turned out, I was actually a little surprised.
It comes out pretty well. I obviously had to speed up or slow down some of the stuff.
Yeah,
but
he hit me up. Richard hit me up, who I never knew, but he reached out to us, and he like asked who did it, and so I told him it was me, and he's like, can I call you? And so he called me, and we started talking on the. He was just picking my brain about shit. It was fucking cool, because I'm a fan. I didn't realize he was gonna ever see it. He was stoked, which made me stoked. And
I think we all remember the most iconic thing was when, I think it was Old School, where he was in, and he sang in the wedding band in Old School.
Actually, that wasn't him, dude. That was the Dan Band.
Oh, the Dan Band. I'm confusing the two. Right. That was the Dan Band.
Which was also a fucking awesome band who we ran into at Baggage Claim once coming home from tour. I was so stoked. I walked up to the singer, Dan. I introduced myself, and we became friends for a second, exchanged numbers, but text each other back and forth about getting together, and he would always invite us to shows and shit, and that was funny stuff.
That's cool. That's funny. That's right. I forgot. I totally confused the two of them. That's pretty funny. And now the last thing on this, that last summer there was some playlist or something on Spotify called Summer Soundwaves, which is amazing because it had your acoustic version of The Reason, and that got 2 billion views already, which is insane. But let's move on to one last thing, because we're almost out of the hour here.
I was like, that's news to me.
It's a playlist that has 2 billion. Yeah, it's a playlist. It's pretty amazing. It is pretty fucking amazing. So it's actually, I think, this week is 3 years ago that your last record came out, Push Pull. It's 2018. I think it's almost exact. It's pretty crazy, right? Well, a year and a half didn't happen, so it's not that long ago when you factor out that year. I listened to some of it. It was produced, if I'm not mistaken, by Matt Wallace, right?
Right, who's literally texting me right now. Oh. Like, he was texting me.
that was that weird noise we heard? Busy. That was the text?
I'm busy, yeah.
So he, from my memory, what I know him from, one of my favorite bands, and I'm sure not stretching this to anybody, Faith No More, such an incredible band, he did Angel Dust, right? And you guys have cited him many times, Patton, as one of your favorite influences. Did you ever meet Mike Patton?
Yes, but not through Matt Wallace. When we first signed a deal, our manager's like, "Hey, go get a compile a list of the your favorite albums and who did them, and we're gonna reach out to see who wants to do the first record." And we met with Matt Wallace like in 2000, and he was awesome then. But we decided to use the producer who had kind of recorded us on Spec Time and taken us under his wing. He put in the work, so we were going to reward him with the album. I guess Dan had kind of kept in touch with Matt off and on over the years, and they, years ago they bumped into each other, and we got the ball rolling again, and then we did that record, and we've actually become really good friends with him in general. But I never met Mike through Matt. I did meet him once a couple times at shows, and this is prior, like as a fan, this is just me as a fucking starstruck fan asking for an autograph. I did wake up once. I remember this
he was in bed with you. That's weird.
Yeah, it was weird. I woke up on the tour bus in Philadelphia with a message from my sister, it's a sister, and this is back on little Nokia phones,
a voicemail,
and I listened to it, and it was, I'm paraphrasing here, but it was basically like, "Hey, Doug, this is Mike Patton. I heard you're out touring a band. Why don't you quit and get a fucking real job? You're not going to amount to shit." Very typical sarcasm, That's or great. Not sarcasm, Mike Patton stuff. And it turned out, my sister had gone to see Tomahawk at the Roxy out here, and there's a bar above the Roxy called On the Rocks. And she had ended up meeting him, and we're talking, and obviously my band came up and stuff. But that's about as close as I've ever that's come.
Cool. He's one of the few guys. I had a rock radio show that was on about 100 stations for 15 years. And interviewed pretty much every rock star I've ever wanted to interview. He's the one that I never, ever got to speak to, which I would love to one day interview him. I'm sure it would be batshit crazy because I think he's definitely a tricky guy to interview, I'd imagine. But the single that I heard off that last record, which is 3 years old right now, is More Beautiful, which definitely has more R&B vibes than I would say most of your prior or maybe earlier music sort of did. Is your intention to go a little more poppy rocky now, or like where is new music coming from if there is going to be any?
Oh,
no, that was never the intent. It just kind of happened. You know, Matt was actually pretty vocal about going, you know, trying to do things that were.
He said, just let the song, like, because the songs all start like with a riff or a demo or some kind of idea. And I don't know, it just went that way. It wasn't like we try to steer it. It just kind of, the more we added like musical elements to it, the funkier it got, you know? Mm-hmm. And, but that definitely wasn't like, yo, we want to do pop and R&B stuff. And that isn't even the song that I would have released in hindsight as a single, but
in the interest of full disclosure, because I'm an honest man, it's the only one I've heard. So I just was like, oh, I liked it. I thought it was cool, but I didn't listen.
I think it's the only one that sounds like that, to be honest with you, on that record.
There's, you know, it's kind of like how when people just learned about us from The Reason on the radio and then came to see us and they're like, what the fuck? There's distortion.
Right.
You know, that album, Push Pull, there's rock stuff on there. It's definitely not heavy. There's some stuff that's heavier, but it's not our heaviest shit. It's
still weird that fans get upset. God forbid you want to be influenced by other things or explore things. People get pissed if it doesn't sound like the last record. It's always weird that happened. I never understood that.
Well, I mean, how pissed did people get when they made New Coke?
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, well, because that was terrible.
Was it?
It was too sweet. I remember thinking it was too sweet. That's what.
Crystal Pepsi, dog. I'm still drinking it, man.
I was just going to say Crystal Pepsi. People.
You know what? So here's what happened, by the way.
$40 a bottle. Let's go, bitches. Come on.
If you remember, at that time, they were doing the Coke Pepsi, the Pepsi Challenge. That was a big thing, right? And the reason why Pepsi won over Coke is that it was a little sweeter. So in one sip, it tastes better versus if you have a whole bottle of it, you may not feel that way. Whatever, right? So then New Coke was sweeter to go after that market, but it failed miserably. There you go. There's a little Coca-Cola backstory for everybody.
Really? I miss those times.
We're big Coca-Cola fans, by the way. Okay. We can sit here and just, Doug and I could just sit here and just like smell it. And just,
I thought you were going to say you could sit here and just talk Coca-Cola for the next hour.
We could.
All right, so let's talk about one of our newer sponsors. It's rockauto.com. Talking to all the auto mechanics out there or any do-it-yourself car owners, I want to tell you all about rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best prices. You know how confident they are? They don't even have a promo code. They don't feel you need one. Why? If you're looking for a car part, they know they're going to have it, and they know they're going to have it at a better price than anywhere else you can find. At rockauto.com, it's easy to find everything you need, whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or just working on your own car. Everyone has access to the same incredible pricing at rockauto.com. So once again, head over to rockauto.com, no promo code needed, and when you make that order, let Rock Auto know that you heard about them on the SDR show. Thank you so much to rockauto.com for being a sponsor. All right, let's get back into it. The last question, then we'll do the first. on Pushpull, there's a Tears for Fears cover, which reminded me that years ago, you guys did a Ghostbusters cover, which also reminded me, I saw you guys once 100 years ago, and you used to do Girls Just Want to Have Fun into Crawling in the Dark. Are there any other covers on the horizon that you guys might release?
We've always dicked around with covers, and I feel like that kind of comes from our loving Faith No More.
Right. It was always sarcastic. It was never like, yo, we, you know, except for the Tears for Fears one is a legit, like, we like that song.
We would do Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and we would do Don't Stop Believing.
Yeah, I remember the Don't Stop Believing too. Yeah.
And we would sometimes do Another Brick Living in the Wall, right?
Right.
And we would do it before
Living on a Prayer.
And Living on a Prayer. Wow. And we would just do little pieces of them before The Reason, actually. And then, I don't know. I mean, we did a cover of that James Bond song. What was the Nobody Does It Better by? Who sings that? Original?
Oh, Carly Simon?
Easton, isn't it?
No, it's Gina Easton. Is it No.
No.
Is it Carly Simon?
It's Carly Simon.
Oh, okay.
So I confuse my Bond theme sometimes, man.
We did a cover of that, which we actually recorded on our own. We did a cover of Billy Joel's Moving Out.
We did Do You Think I'm Sexy?
Russell, wow. Do You Think I'm Sexy?
The answer is yes, by the way.
Well, yeah, we've done some things. It's nothing we really released other than
I was going to say, and going forward, yes, I would assume that we'd probably cover something in a half jokingly, kind of sarcastic manner. Something that
I've actually been talking to our manager a little bit about filming some stuff on this summer tour, just getting some live content of us on stage, backstage with the crew on the bus, fucking around and stuff, and chopping it up to Head Over Heels and making some type of a video, some type of content for it. And, you know, we can control the narrative there. And we get out more. I really think it's a cool version that we did, whether people love it or hate it. You know, I just want to.
And then you guys could throw it up on the talk. I'm trying to make that a thing for a while now. The talk. Now, no one agrees with it but me. The talk. What TikTok. The Come on! Come on now! Yeah. Get with the hip term.
No, dude!
All the kids are saying it.
Is that what they're calling it?
Well, if the kids, you mean 151-year-old, then yes, all the kids are saying it.
They were calling it that until they heard you just say it.
Right. All right, so we're gonna do the first right now to wrap this up.
The first time ever I saw concert. Did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show, as you know, is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. We've asked this question to every guest that's been on the show from the dawn of time about their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we mean the first concert you went to on your own volition. Nobody dragged you like a parent, but you wanted to go see the concert. What concert was it? Say, Doug, you go first.
David Lee Roth, Eat 'Em and Smile Tour.
Oh, that's a good one. I love that one. How old were you?
What year was that?
I was maybe 12.
That's great. Well, that's a great one to see.
I went with my friend, and we were the fans. Poison opened up at the Forum. Yeah, I was fucking blown away.
That's so cool. He definitely was back when they were having their rivalry. Eat 'Em and Smile, then Van Halen put out OU812. It was a great time for rock and roll. All right, Dan, you? Yeah.
First concert I ever went to was actually Lollapalooza 92.
Wow, we just had Perry Farrell on the show not that long ago. Super interesting dude. What year? How old were you at that point?
I was 15.
And at that point, 15. For both of you, had you already decided rock and roll was my path, or did those concerts help solidify those ideas?
I think I was so young. My best friend at the time was this guy who kind of got me into Van Halen in general, and David Lee Roth, stuff like that. He was all about it, man. He wanted to start a band when we were in sixth grade. No, the answer is no. But I did. I was completely fascinated by the whole thing, the whole spectacle of it all, you know. But I didn't. At that time, you remember, especially if you're a fan of bands like Van Halen, David Lee Roth, the only path to rock starhood was being some kind of virtuoso, or you had to be the best at your, and I wasn't. I was a hack who could play, you know, five chords, and you know, that was it. So I never, at that point, I never thought that, but the early 90s changed all that.
It was a wild time when everybody was a virtuoso in the 80s. The Steve Vais of the world and the Billy Sheehans of the world that were just, you looked at them like, how the fuck am I going to do that? It was a crazy time.
Right.
So now, the first drug you guys ever did, ideally after pot, unless pot wasn't your first drug. We'll flip it now. Dan, you go first.
Pot was probably my first.
And
you
the
know,
one
in
after
seventh
that.
Grade, in seventh grade, I tried smoking weed. But I never stooped. I started smoking pot. I tried smoking pot out of a Coke can when I was in seventh grade. And I fucking felt so guilty for doing it that I went home and told my mom. It's like, Mom, I feel like shit. And I didn't get high or anything, but I didn't smoke after that. I wasn't a stoner. I didn't smoke weed ever again until I was 27.
27, wow.
Yeah, after the Reason days and shit. We were on tour with Velvet Revolver, and one of our crew guys was like, had some weed, and I was like, and so I started smoking.
Anything after weed, like the next drug after weed, if there was one.
Vicodin because I was in an accident. Other than that, man, you know, drank a little bit. Yeah. Like, I've never done shit. I microdose mushrooms every once in a while, but I don't ever feel it. You know, I've never really done drugs other than what
I do. You think
mentioned.
That your first time smoking weed in a Coke can is why you love Coke today?
Ooh.
No, because I loved Coke before that.
Oh, okay.
That's the only way to get him to try the weed is to put it in a Coke can.
And I don't love smoking weed out of a Coke can. I love smoking weed out of a pipe with Coke in it instead of water. Yeah. But but yeah, as far as like cocaine and all that shit, like never, man. I mean, Doug and I, when we were younger in the band, we were in Vegas in a hotel room with another band, friends of ours. And those guys casually just had Coke on the counter, and they're like, "Yo, you guys want some of this?" Like it was like,
dude, it was so exciting.
And we're like, "No, but go for it."
But I was like, "The movies." I'm like, "Holy shit, it's happening!" Like,
this is so funny.
Cocaine.
yeah. I remember being like terrified and fascinated and excited, and because like yeah, these were our band, like our buddies, and we're like, "Holy god, they're fucking! This is just like the movies. This is just the fucking movies. It's happening."
Let me rewind though. We were never interested in music and the rock star lifestyle because of all that shit. We didn't look up to rock stars that did drugs and shit like that. I think we were the opposite of that, actually. We actually kind of clowned it a little bit. Just like in high school, whenever we'd go to a party and there was all the dudes drinking, party, we were the guys just kind of fucking laughing and going like, fucking idiots, you know? not to say we haven't done our share of fucking around and doing stupid shit.
Yeah, but I know. I've seen the inside of you video. I know you guys do. What about you, Doug? Your first drug after weed?
Nothing. I mean, nothing. I would say I'm even cleaner than him. And it's not I think the first time I smoked weed, I was already 30. Like, I've never had a cigarette in my fucking mouth.
I've been trying to get him to smoke weed to try it. After I had gotten stoned and was smoking, I was like, "Dude, you gotta fucking try this, Doug. You gotta try this shit. You're gonna dig it."
So he came over one day. We smoked a little with a buddy of ours, and it was cool. I kind of felt it and giggled a little bit, but I don't think it was quite satisfactory to meet his expectations. So he came back a couple of days later, or a week later, like that,
with
his bong, and I took a massive rip, and then I almost died. I think
I had to carry him inside. Yeah, we were out in the backyard. And he just was like all cool for a second, and all of a sudden it hit him.
Just gone. Just
I had to get behind him and like fucking walking.
I was like just like shaking for hours, just like shaking.
Love it. Silly.
So that's it though. But I haven't done anything else. I don't. I don't even have any fucking. We don't even have tattoos, man.
I have one sort of tattoo, which is not even really a tattoo. I host this thing. Used to host this thing called Shiprocked, which is a big rock cruise every year, and I felt I was the only guy on the boat that didn't have a tattoo. So one time during a live event, I had a tattoo artist come out. I dropped my pants and he put a dot on my ass, so I have a dot on my
ass,
but that's it. And I said, I'm one of you people now. All right, so
I'm sure you've thought about it, but no tattoos is the new tattoos.
Sure. Yeah, we're much cool. You, the three of us, are much cooler than these two.
We are way. Whoa. We are making way more we have made way more of a punk rock statement with our loud tattoos than people with tattoos. We're,
the three of us are more badass than James and Shannon could ever be. So now, the first time you guys had sex, not with each other, but the first time you had sex.
In our lives or on tour or with,
so by the way, it's a two-part question. The first one is in your lives, and the second part, when, and I always say this, I apologize to listen, but when Gilby Clark came out, he coined the term rock star sex, which was the first time you have sex because you're who you are. But we'll start with the first time you had sex.
What if they're the same?
That could be great. That'd be great.
Oh yeah. I think I was
you want their names too, right?
Yeah, and their addresses and their Facebook.
I think I was a junior in high school.
So like 16?
Yeah, 16. 16, closely going on 17. With a girl that I was kind of dating. We weren't officially boyfriend, girlfriend.
In high school, I was like, "That's Doug's girlfriend." Everybody was like, "That's Doug's girlfriend."
What? and it was at my friend's house when his parents were out of town.
Okay. And so it was a planned thing.
Kind of, yeah. Which makes it even worse.
Oh, not worse. That's how you roll when you're 16.
Yeah, but it's a lot of pressure, man. It's a lot of pressure.
I'm guessing it didn't go so well based on that. Dan, your turn?
Well, it went well for me.
That's all that matters. Pow! You know. Dan, your first one?
I was older, man. I was actually like 18 or 19. And it was my first girlfriend at the time.
Wow. And now if you're willing to share the story, the first rock star sex. We are Hoobastank. We're popular. Gilby told the story where he just came into the dressing room one day and there was just a girl waiting for him in the dressing room. You don't know how she got there and it just happened. So, and he's like, oh, this is because I'm famous, you know, so.
I don't know. I mean, I would say.
I'll tell you, Doug's. Doug can tell you mine.
No, it was, I'm thinking there was a time, and I remember telling you like right, it was, I don't know if it was right after we signed or maybe even before we got signed. It might've been right after we signed. And yeah, I did. It was, I think it was like my first time just kind of meeting someone, and hooking up right away. I was always, and obviously that was purely because she'd probably seen me on stage or whatever, you know. It wasn't like, it was the first time I'd ever like hooked up with somebody that I didn't have to put any type of effort into it. Like I didn't have to like put in, you know, days or weeks of hey, let's, you know, hang out and do this.
In other words, she didn't have to find a reason.
Oh wow.
Yeah, but it wasn't like super, you know, it wasn't super wild or anything, but the fact that it was, I think I remember telling you like, dude, like that, you know, I was single at the time, but it wasn't my girlfriend. It was just some girl, you know, and I think that was before everything happened.
This it was like before the first record came out, but maybe you
yes,
were.
Yes, yes. Okay. But we were, yeah.
You were a staple in the LA scene, so she knew you from that.
Yeah.
And you, Dan?
We had played a show. We weren't even signed yet, but we had played a show opening for a band at like the Palace in Hollywood at the time, which I think is called the Avalon now. I don't even actually know what it's called, but. We were opening for this band there. We were unsigned, but we were bigger in LA. And I remember getting into my car to leave, and this girl comes running up with some other people, and she was just like, stop playing, was so stoked. And her first thing that she said to me, we weren't signed or anything at this point, but, oh my God, you guys are so good. You're so hot or whatever. And I looked at her and I was like, holy shit, this girl's beautiful. Like this fucking beautiful girl, like, is talking to me. And we exchanged phone numbers, and I ended up, you know.
Doing the old heave-ho?
but it wasn't, yeah, but it was like, because I'm a gentleman.
Of course. Nothing says gentleman other than this.
Than the heave-ho.
We kept in touch, and we saw each other more than one time.
Okay, so. That's me. That means you're a tender man, Dan. You're a tender man.
I grew out of that shit, though, as I got older, though.
I grew up.
Yeah, all right, so summerlandtour.net is for all the dates with that. You will be touring, and it is the 20th anniversary of the first record. Go to the YouTube, has a lot of great clips from there as well, and it's at Hoobastank for Instagram and all the socials. Is there anything else you guys want to plug before we go around the room to plug everything?
I mean, we got that tour, man. You said it. I think that's really important. You know, people need to get out and come see some live music, and we need to get out. We've fucking been sitting around for too long, and
I'm definitely going to, when you guys hit the New York City area, I'm definitely going to come. I'm going to use my insides with Corey Glover to sneak in tickets, because that's my juice right there is Corey.
Make sure you come say what's up. If you're there and we're there, please come find us.
I will come, and I'll bring Shannon's Hoobastank.
Ooh.
I'll bring my girlfriend's Ralph Sutton, because I want something to do that night.
Yeah, you guys just hit us up. Come on up.
100%. All right, let's go around the room and do plugs. James, your plugs, please.
All right, the James Madden on the Instagrams, the Commissioner Comedy Podcast, which is about the etiquette of comedy. Also, Peanut Allergy Song on Spotify. And I'm going to be at the Borgata in Atlantic City, July 11th, 12th, 15th, and 17th. Baby, I'm back. I'm going to make bad decisions that week. I'm going to get in a lot of Hoobastanks. I'm going to get the Ralph Sutton. And I've never gotten high, but you guys have inspired me. I'm going to try it through a Welch's Grape can as a tribute to you and Biggie Smalls. What up, baby?
All right, Shannon, your plugs.
You can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
And by the way, do you mean the talk? Because I don't know what TikTok is. You meant the talk, right? Okay. Do you guys, by the way, last question, you guys, she does a show about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. I like to always take a guess if people believe in ghosts. I'm going to say neither of them believe in ghosts. James, what do you say?
Oh, man. No. These gentlemen, ghosts.
Shannon?
Ghosts.
I think Doug, yes. Dan, no.
Okay, guys, ghosts or no ghosts?
What is it that I just want to know what we are basing that those assumptions on?
All right, well, I'll start mine. You both said in the beginning you're both stupid, and I just went with that. That's how I went.
Okay.
No, I think Shannon got it actually backwards.
Yeah, I'm not a ghost guy.
Okay, and
you're a fucking
Dan,
atheist,
you
dude. You can't be a ghost,
I'm not a ghost guy. It's not like I got ghost fucking posters up on my wall and shit like that. But
ghost posters.
You mean the movie? You mean the movie The Ghost? That's what we're talking about. Then.
I don't believe ghost in the movie.
Ghost,
Patrick
ghost
Swayze.
Busters, ghost. Yeah.
No, I don't acknowledge Whoopi winning the Oscar for that.
I don't acknowledge
of
any
shit.
Of that.
I do not ever sit around and go, "Fuck, I wonder what ghosts are up to." I'm going to go investigate ghosts.
What ghosts are up to?
By the way, I think atheist is a. I think atheist is a strong stance.
I'm open to anything. I believe in everything and I believe in nothing. So
right, fair enough. I'm agnostic. I think atheist is a hard sell.
No. I agree. I am not so atheist to admit that it's really just agnosticism. You know what I mean? I'm open to be proven wrong, but
right. Well, then you're agnostic. If you're open, agnostic.
Reasonably, it seems reasonable to say that that of all the.
That there's not a dude in the sky that cares if you eat something.
Right.
I agree with that.
I don't think that's an unreasonable statement. Yeah. So therefore, I'm going with it.
Right. Okay. I'll allow it. Okay. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other show on health and wellness called Good Sugar Podcast that I do with the founder of Juice Press, that Big J renamed Juice Man and the Monster, which I love. That comes out every single Monday. We're going to play a song of the week, which we do every single week. We add a song. And only because I feel not enough people know how fucking hot the girls are in this video and more people need to see it. We're going to add Inside of You from Hoobastank because, God damn it, I could watch that video on repeat all day long. And I got to tell you guys, if you paid me per time I played it in a strip club, you guys owe me thousands of dollars because I played that every single night. I'm telling you. All right, guys, thank you so much for being part of the show. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks for having us.
Peace.
Listening to the SDR Show.